Greetings, and thank you for joining us for the 29th episode of DC Animation with Spencer and Friends. This is an LMG podcast production. Today, I am joined by a new friend.
Yes, a very happy friend to be here.
And boy, are we excited to have you. Could you
introduce
yourself?
Was I supposed to introduce myself? I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, you're good.
Okay, yeah. Along with being a very happy friend, the name of said friend is Benjamin David.
And we're so happy to have you here. What do you do? How did this happen?
All right, so it happened due to my obsession with not only DC Animation, but DCAM's DC Animated Movies. On top of that, I also happen to be a podcaster myself, but all this grows organically out of being a podhead, a pod-obsessed person, specifically with DC Animated Movies. And I was saying off mic just now how much I love your podcast. So I am so pumped to be here because I'm able to talk directly to the voice of this podcast that I've been listening to so much, in addition to, once again, my own experience podcasting. DC Animation has been a thing that I have covered on both podcasts, YouTube. I was an amateur journalist, if you will, up in New Jersey. I never got paid or anything, but I would interview Kevin Conroy himself, RIP, and just got to the fortunate opportunity to meet so many of these people that, and on top of, you know, the press stuff, fans like you, I would always have a section of each podcast episode where it was like fans and other content creators. But I guess the final thing I'll say is that in introducing myself and how I got on the show is that it's a niche thing, DC Animation, and specifically within that, DC Animated Movies. Like, not everyone, you know, I listen to like a lot of Batman podcasts. Not everyone within the Batman podcasts are necessarily super deep into the animated movies, but this is a thing that I really love, and I'm very happy to once again talk directly to you. So I reached out, and here I am.
Yes, so good. If you want to plug your podcast, you are welcome to. I know we're small, but you know, you may get some new listeners.
Sure.
Who knows?
Oh no worries. Yeah, you gotta. You always gotta plug the pods. But yes, Above and Batman Beyond is the name of our podcast, telling you to go above and Batman Beyond. But yes, that's our. That's the name of the podcast. I've had that podcast, believe it or not, now for 7 years, which is crazy. We haven't recorded in quite a while, but it's actually something that's gonna factor into what we talk about tonight, which is my new project, which is talking about gangster movies, and I guess I'll plug that in the process. But yeah, I have a YouTube channel, B David Studio, so youtube.com/@B David Studios, and that's where I have GMTV, Gangster Movies and Television. We talk all about if it is organized, if it is crime, we're going to talk about it. That's our little motto there. But yeah, Above and Batman Beyond was the DC Animation thing. Like I said, I had the amazing opportunity to be a bit of a journalist up in New Jersey, go to New York Comic Con and interview people. So we have some of the interviews still on the podcast feed. And then we cover Batman Beyond, DC Animation, and DC News.
Excellent. Excellent. So as you can hear, folks, we have with us an expert. We have with us somebody with credentials, somebody with a resume, if you will. And so can you tell us really quick about your personal DC consumption? We've already kind of, you know, discussed the movies. You know, I can hear that you are very much into the, you know, DC animated universe, but are there any, you know, comic books, any video games, TV shows? Mm. Like, are you just consuming all DC all the time? What are you taking in?
Yeah. So it's funny you have asked that question, especially on this day. I hadn't touched a DC video game in, I don't even know how long, probably 3 years. And then just today I dusted off my old Xbox One, had to get my power cord from Amazon. Like, I had to really put it all back together and played Arkham for the first time in 3 years. And it felt pretty amazing. I love Arkham, but my first love, honestly, is, and this is why, as you just said, I, you know, it's going to sound like I'm pumping myself up a little, but I am kind of a perfect guest specifically for this episode, just because aside from the gangster stuff and all the stuff that's going to fit with the story and everything with Mask of the Phantasm, DC Animation, my interest in doing the podcast grew once again out of my obsession with DC Animation, DC animated movies. My DCAMs are what got me the, again, that's my short word for DC animated movies. DCAMs are what kind of reignited my interest in Batman and DC in general. Like, I was obsessed with Batman as a kid, but I wasn't a big collector. I was a Bat fan, and definitely when the Nolan movies came out, I got obsessed with that. But you couldn't really call me a through and through Bat fan. And then when I was about 28, I started finding, rediscovering Batman the animated series. So then, of course, Mask of the Phantasm. And then it was like, oh, beside Mask of the Phantasm, there's Sub-Zero, there's, Mystery the Batwoman. What's this? What's that? And then the DeCamo started coming out, the DC animated movie universe, when the New 52 and the Tuckerverse, as some people call it, we call it the DeCamo on our show. Oh, I also have a DC animated, it's literally called the DC Animated Movie Show podcast. I forgot to even mention that. And on that, we talk, there's a couple DeCamo episodes on that. And so all this was coming out again around the time where I'm like 28, 30 years old. And then that, to finish answering the question in a very long-winded way, is that rounds out the comics, because the animation is what brought me then to be like, all right, let me start reading Batman comics. And especially the past few years, I kind of put down the comics for a couple years there, got mostly into the animation with the podcast and everything like that. And then most recently, I am kind of a Wednesday warrior. Like, I'm in the comic shop every week. I don't, standard Batman is not my thing. I really like what they're doing with DC with the, what is it, the Black Label and stuff like that, when they have miniseries and then Black Label. So again, to kind of recap, I'd say mostly 90%, let's say, probably animation. And then from there, comics, and literally today, my reignited interest, let's say, in Arkham. Arkham I was obsessed with when that came out too.
All right. All right. Sounds good. We're long-winded here, so that's not a problem at all.
Okay. Yeah, I hope I'm not rambling too much. Please feel free to.
No, you're good. We love a ramble here and there, so it's
Good.
definitely not a problem. Well, I appreciate you for joining us on this journey through DC Animation. Today's film is Batman: Mask of the Phantasm, released Christmas Day, 1993. This is a very special episode, and we are bringing you this episode in honor of Batman's 85th anniversary. Batman's first appearance was in Detective Comics number 27, which hit the shelves March 30th, 1939. And
Wow.
so if you are thinking to yourself, hey, this movie is, out of order, what are we doing? That's what we're doing. So again, this is a special episode, and we had to bring it to you. So I'm going to read a synopsis in
You
my
got to
own
celebrate
words.
Batman's 85th, yeah.
Got to celebrate Batman's 85th. Exactly. So I'm going to read a synopsis of the movie in my own words, and then we're just going to talk about it.
Do it.
And so we open in Gotham City, where Batman is disrupting a counterfeit operation. Of course, the boss tries to escape, but is intercepted by the Phantasm. The boss ends up dead behind the wheel of his car, and the media, of course, is attacking Batman for it. Back at the Wayne Manor, Bruce is analyzing a piece of windshield to find the origin of the residue left behind. Bruce throws an extravagant party at which he is in full billionaire playboy mode. Then, in a flashback, we see how Bruce met Andrea Beaumont and some of his early days as, a crime fighter. While visiting Chucky Soule's grave, Buzz Bronski is visited by the Phantasm, who ends up killing him, and his men mistake him for Batman. Commissioner Gordon refuses to go after Batman because he knows that Batman is not a killer. While investigating at the cemetery, Batman accidentally comes across Andrea, who is visiting her mother's grave. Andrea goes on a date with Councilman Arthur Reeves as Batman spies on them, which takes us into another flashback of Bruce's time with Andrea, where he meets her father and Arthur for the first time. He has a decision to make. Does he choose to live life as Bruce Wayne, or does he choose to live life as Batman? Coming out of the flashback, Salvatore Valestra is getting really nervous after hearing the news that Batman is killing people. So in the Batcave, Batman learns that the criminals that have been murdered so far have a connection not only to Salvatore, but also to Andrea's father. In a flashback, Bruce proposes to Andrea, and of course she says yes, but she ends up leaving, which allows the Batman to happen. Coming out of the flashback, Valestra goes to see the Joker, because, this Batman thing is really a problem. And, he goes to him to see if he can take care of it. Batman goes to Andrea to interrogate her about her father's involvement with the criminals, but she has nothing for him. The Phantasm goes to visit Salvatore, but the Phantasm is met with his body having already been hit with the Joker venom. The Joker sees with a camera that it is, in fact, not Batman, then detonates the bomb that was placed there, and the Phantasm is able to narrowly escape. Batman is able to track down the Phantasm, but then the police show up and the Phantasm disappears. So now the police start chasing Batman. Batman almost gets caught, but Andrea shows up right on time to save him. Back at the manor, Andrea tells Bruce what the deal is with her father. He owed money that he couldn't pay, and so he had to escape. But then, whenever he did have the money, the criminals still wanted their pound of blood. So he had to become the Phantasm to deal with that. So the Joker goes to visit Arthur and lets him know that Batman isn't behind this. Also to blackmail him. Also to hit him with the Joker venom. But he is able to get to the hospital where he is interrogated by Batman about meeting with the Joker and his involvement and the men in question. Turns out he's the one who told the goons where Beaumont was, so they got him. So Batman goes to search Andrea's place, but the Joker calls in a drone strike, which Batman is able to survive. So the Phantasm goes to visit the Joker, and he has already figured out that it's been Andrea all along. So they get to throwing hands, and the Joker sets up a giant fan to take her out. But Batman arrives right on time. Batman tries to get her to stop doing this, but of course she disappears into the smoke. So then Batman and the Joker begin their fight. The Joker sets up bombs to explode everything, and he tries to make his escape, but Batman catches him. Turns out Andrea didn't leave because she needs to end this tonight. So the explosions begin, and Andrea and the Joker disappear into the smoke, and Batman is able to get out of the explosion through the sewer system underground. Alfred tells Bruce that there was nothing he could have done to save her. She leaves Gotham, and Batman resumes life protecting the streets. And that's the film.
I love your synopses. Solid.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I
What'd you think of the movie?
this little film.
Yeah, you know.
This obsession of mine. Yeah, I mean, this movie has everything I love. Batman, right? It's got Batman. It's animation. It's a gangster movie. It's film noir. Art Deco. A good love story. Then it even has retro future, which non-spoilers yet, but like God, there is just so much for me once again that just it's when you sometimes watch something and you feel like they've made it for you and you just keep going rolling through this list of why do you keep giving me the things that I want? And we'll get into specific moments later, but I would say that kind of sums it up. I know I just went through a list of specific things that I love, but and then even I guess it's important to cover some story stuff. The like way that this is how you do time jumps, and again, without getting too specific, it's very clearly a story about the past, present, and future of this character, and the future stuff is almost in a blatant to the level of fun at the end, but all these very clear symbols and story points and flashbacks and time jumps where you're saying this is who this guy was, this is who he is now, and this is we're going to solidify who he's going to be into the future. And I'm going to give a couple counter examples. One, I don't hesitate at all because I kind of hate on DC for doing it. But the other is Chris Nolan, where it's just like, Chris Nolan, you are wrong, DC. You are wrong specifically with DC in how they use the character of the Joker. So I guess I'll leave it at that. That's my overall thoughts of watching it. And not, even visually, I guess briefly I'll say that it looks the amount of challenges that they faced, specifically with producing the animation in this movie, it still looks really good. And I'm looking forward to talking about that.
Okay. Excellent. I had a good time. This took me back, and there's definitely a comparison that I wanted to make earlier in this series, but because we hadn't discussed this movie, I couldn't do that. But now I can because we have talked about it. So I'm sure that there are going to be comparisons all over the place. But yeah, it took me back to a happier time. A time of just, youth and like none of the challenges of being an adult. But yeah, outside of the nostalgia, which is good because this was my first time watching it as an adult. Like I remembered it as a child, but this is my first time watching it with grown-up eyes, and it still holds up really well. Like it doesn't surprise me that there are people who have this marked as their favorite Batman movie, period.
Wait, so when was the last time you saw it?
Probably like early teens.
Oh, wow,
So
really?
yeah, I hadn't
And
yeah,
how
I
old are you
haven't seen
now?
this since then. Because I think I
Not to
saw
interrupt
it.
you, I just want to be clear on it because I've seen this so many.
I'm 31.
Okay, wow. So you haven't
And
seen it
so
that long. Amazing.
yeah.
Okay.
So I think I watched it around the time Batman Begins came out because Batman Begins came out. And so that was the last time I remember like sitting down and watching it.
Got it.
But it has been that long. But
Interesting. No, that's almost cooler because you're seeing it with such different eyes. Cool.
yeah. And so it I mean, of course it didn't feel like watching it for the first time, but as close to that as you can, because you can never get a first time back. And so as close to that as you can be is kind of what this felt like. And yeah, of course it was just good. And so yeah, we can just talk through the movie.
Cool.
We open, with Gotham City, and the well, before we do that, I think I know the answer already, but what were your thoughts on the voice cast?
Oh, I mean, so I'll put it to you this way. When I, and I'm just, this is going to sound like I'm just name dropping left and right, but fine, I will.
That's fine.
Not only when I did the press stuff, but the year before that was when it really, like you just said about your first time, I didn't even have press passes the first time I met and saw the voice of Batman. And he was standing across the room at New York Comic Con. And I had met several celebs in my life. I had never really been starstruck, and I'm, even to this day, I haven't. And again, I've been to a decent amount of cons and done press and stuff. That guy, I didn't know where to look. I didn't know where to stand. I didn't know where to move. I was just like, oh my God. And I will say, back to the voice specifically, in person, the second he opens his mouth, that voice just hits you like that. Like the beauty and power of the voice of Kevin Conroy when he's not Batman is exactly why he is Batman. And that voice just always, not to get too personal, whatever, but a big father figure in my life. Like my father was around and stuff, but I just, as obsessed as I was with Batman, TV was, I watched way too much TV as a child, let's say that. And so there were, basically that voice, it means everything to me. I also love, Dana Delaney, right? Who was Lois Lane on STIS? Fantastic, man. And I always, so you said that interestingly, Phantasm, and again, to stay on topic and not get too personal, but I didn't even know this movie existed. Again, I wasn't a very good, I guess, fan as a child growing up. I would get really into certain things and then fall out. It's not like I collected or whatever.
I think
So I
that's most
literally,
kids, honestly. Like, it's
yeah, right.
when
I
you're a
mean,
kid, you're trying to find stuff, and yeah, like that. No, that's fine. Because there was a point when I didn't really care about Batman because everybody else loved Batman, and I just had to be different. So,
Yeah, it's like that too. Yes.
yeah, no,
That's
you're
so
definitely
funny.
good.
Yeah, so like I point is I didn't know this movie even existed until I guess there was a point I mentioned before that my real resurgence, I guess, was late 20s, early 30s, like I said before. But before that, I didn't have in the age of what was it? Hard drives and laptops. And then you could download when you were really able to download and pirate tons of video. I don't pirate anymore. I can honestly say that. But especially, I've worked in the industry. I still technically do. I do voice work and stuff. So I just can't justify pirating. And I'm not going to judge. I'm just saying I don't. But like back then, it was just like Pirate City. Like I would just get a hard drive and a laptop, and it was like all of Batman the Animated Series. This was like 2009, 2010. And I watched some of it then, and that's when I discovered Phantasm. So I guess I was like 20 the first time. How old was I? And I was 20, mid 20s. Yeah, early to mid 20s when I discovered Phantasm. And man, it was just like, what am I watching? It was so good. Like I just couldn't believe that like that level of filmmaking was being put into one of these. Even I as much as I knew how good Batman the Animated Series was. Oh, sorry, we went totally went off. We were talking about voice stuff. Anyway, back to the voice cast, Dana Delaney. What brought me to all that was my memory of her was STAS. So well, I hear her, I hear STAS, but it she still very much embodies Andrea. And Mark Hamill, man, it's just this. I was paying attention extra because of, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's cliche to say that Mark Hamill crushed it, but I was paying attention extra because of this review. And he is so good as that character. I mean, he just absolutely crushes that role. And trying to think who else cast wise. I don't. This is a knock that I'll have, and I guess we'll leave it at this. Oh, Ephraim Zimbalist. I gotta. While we're talking about voice cast, give it up for him in the scene when, without spoiling, because it's a flashback of Batman putting on the cowl for the first time, and he just, puts out his billionaire hand like, "Hand me the cowl," and has his butler buttle over the cowl for the first time, and he put adorns it, turns around, and Ephraim Zimbalist, dude, the way he's just like, "My God, it is genius." And like, if you think about it, if you think about that moment, that is the first time anyone has ever seen Batman.
That's true.
So to embody that with those two words, is amazing. And I guess one knock that I have though is I don't. This is a knock on so many cartoons. When they try to do like New York gangster voices, it's always overdone. And it's like, I know you're in LA, but I think Andrea Romano could do a way better job with just having these guys, because there was so much subtlety in the voice acting. And I would say specifically, I'll let it go in like a normal BTAS episode. But I guess if I have a criticism, it's with the voicing, it's just like, this is so gangster heavy that it's literally a gangster movie within this larger epic. And it's kind of like, step up your. Again, she's normally has a lot of subtlety, especially for a cartoon. There's very little subtlety in early 90s cartoons, and that made BTAS stand out so much. I kind of wish more of that was brought to the gangster characters in that.
I could see that. Andrea normally does great work. Like every time I would see her name, I'd be like, all right, it's going to be a good one. Like
Right. Oh yeah, she's yeah.
she does phenomenal work. As far as the voice cast goes, of course, Kevin is my Batman. And
Whoo.
that's not going anywhere. I think that this movie specifically is his best performance. from what I
Oh,
can
okay.
recall, from what I've seen, from like everything that I've taken in that Kevin Conroy has done as Batman, like this is number one. The nuance that was there whenever he was Bruce versus when he was Batman was it was phenomenal. Like that's voice acting. That's voice work. It was so good. And of course, we got to see, I mean, this, as far as I know, this is the first time I think I'd seen Batman's actual origin story. Because, I mean, we know his origin story, you know, parents got shot and all that. But I mean, as far as like actually seeing him in his early days and doing stuff leading up to him actually becoming Batman, this is the first time I remember seeing that. I don't
Well, yeah, that was
know
like one
if.
of the main. Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say I don't know, because in the Keaton movies, like we didn't see that at all, and I don't know of anything really before that. But yeah, this is the first time I remember seeing like pre-Batman Batman.
Yeah, no, it is. It's the first. I'm pretty sure it is the first kind of year one put to film. And the other thing I was that really stood out to me this time was that, and I'm so glad I remembered because I didn't even look through my notes. It's down to my notes. One of the things the show was so one of the things that made it of its time, even though, like I just said before, many of the things made it stand out of its time. But what was of its time is the serialized nature of that show, or sorry, the episodic nature of that show versus the serialization. Now we take for granted things are serialized. It's like this episode leads into that, and there's just these grand, kind of Sopranos, Game of Thrones level, and that's applied to like every little show now. Whereas back then, most things were episodic. So, like, for example, when people criticize the show for not having a finale, it's like, let it go. This was the show ended in what, 99, altogether with TNBA. So it's like, but to this, it's kind of like what's cool about this movie is that it's taking a property that throughout its duration was very episodic and applies this epic origin to it so that if you're ever like, well, where did it begin? Where is it going? Who is this guy? You will always kind of have the Bible of the whole show. And I just think
Yes.
it's like such a great thing for them, especially to kick off. Like, what's the first movie we're gonna do? Well, we're gonna actually tell this dude's story in a format that we know we're never gonna have because, to their mind, there was never a future where they would be able to tell again serialized cartoons.
So good, honestly. And I mean, the fact that it still holds up is, I mean, that's just a testament to how good it is. But yeah, I mean, you know, I assume everybody knows that, but you know, who
Well,
knows?
yeah, and a lot of that goes with the whole aesthetic of it, right? The timelessness of the dark deco, as they called it on the show. And it's just it will always, and they were even to the production, which I'm sure we're gonna get into, they were recording real sound design for a cartoon. Like they'd go out and break stuff and smash stuff and, set off firecrackers for explosions and all kinds of stuff that no animated series were doing. Obviously all the music and everything. So I think between the quality and then the choice of setting it in this any time kind of retro deco future thing, makes it organically timeless.
Agreed. Okay. So, in the movie, we see that, you know, there's some counterfeiting operation going on. Batman shows up and he, you know, puts a stop to it. And so the boss, Chucky, is on his way out and he is met by the Phantasm, who we see for the first time. And when I was writing the synopsis, I kept referring to the Phantasm as the Angel of Death, waiting for them to be referred to as the Phantasm, and it never happened. So, because at first I wrote in, you know, the mysterious Angel of Death, and because that's how the Phantasm was referring to itself. And yeah, whenever it never called, it would like Phantasm, the word Phantasm was never uttered. And so I was like, all
Oh, is that
right.
right? Phantasm's never uttered in this movie?
From what I recall, I did
Wow,
not
that's so
hear it.
interesting. That's a good trivia fact. Okay.
So, yeah, the fact that that never came up, I was like, all right, I'll just put Phantasm in all those spots, because usually I would start referring to them as the Phantasm once we know as an audience that that's who that is. But nope. So that was interesting to me. But
Interesting.
see, because I guess, yeah, like since everybody thought it was Batman, nobody referred to the Phantasm. And
Right,
so,
because there'd be no reference to, because that was the mystery. Nice.
but he ends up dead, and Batman, of course, is blamed because Batman is there, and the councilman is got a campaign against Batman, like, hey, we need to get rid of this now. This vigilanteism is a problem. And Commissioner Gordon is like, nope. No, I'm good. I'm not gonna do that.
No.
And I love the Commissioner Gordon is just like, he's a good guy. So how about
Yeah.
you just let him do what he's gonna do? He didn't do
Well,
it.
yeah, and I also love that, the whole thing with Gordon and the justice system and who Batman is, once again, this whole movie is this solidification of the character. So it's perfect to have an excuse to go, like, you're using the Phantasm kind of as an excuse to say, how do we force the public into this Dark Knight type philosophical debate of whether or not this Batman is a good character? In the Dark Knight, there was always that, and South Park does the whole, like, making fun of it with the interviews and stuff of, like, is this character safe to have around town? Blah blah blah. But yeah, it's like, is the moral worth of vigilantism in the style that Batman's doing it, if that's not too wordy. So, like, it's cool to have the Phantasm be killing gangsters, because it's then that classic spectrum of justice or vengeance for Batman.
And one of the things that I think that DC does a lot of is using the media and kind of calling into question the validity of vigilantism and like how people feel about it and the approval ratings and all that, because that's something that we see across a lot of DC movies is the media involvement and the perception that comes with that life. And I think it's one of the many things that the boys took pretty directly from DC. Because the boys, like, media is an image. That's their whole thing.
Oh, those are
And
my favorite parts of that show, is the interviews.
yeah,
Yeah.
and of course, a lot of that is pulled from directly from real life as far as like the corporation and all of that. But as far as like the media perception and all of that, like, I feel like DC does a lot of that, where you are falling into that morally gray area, or the point of like, is it justice? Is it vengeance? Is it right? Do the people's opinions really matter? Is Batman actually a criminal? Like, those kinds of things. DC does that so well. And it's one of
Agreed.
my favorite things that they are able to incorporate into their stories.
Yeah.
So, Batman's analyzing, the windshield to figure out what's going on. And then we see shortly after that, Batman throws a party and he's got women just all over him. And there's one lady who is not happy to see him. And I thought that was just hilarious, where there are these women that are like, you're all alone in this big giant house. And then, yeah, somebody comes and she's like, well, all he does is lose your number, and then throws a drink at him in his house.
And it's good, because it's like, that's how much playing the Playboy actually has been doing. Because there, we all know that, or sorry, most Bat fans know the classic, like, all right, the real character that he's playing is the billionaire Playboy. But, and what I kind of did like about Snyder too, it's like, oh no, this dude's actually partying and, like, getting with women. So let's not forget that in order to fulfill that persona, he's still doing
Yeah, because he's got an image to maintain.
it.
And it's so funny
And also,
because
in his defense, he also cannot get attached. So that's another thing.
And that's what I was going to say is
Oh, sorry.
the actual reason that he's ghosting these women is because like getting attached is not an option. And so, you know, he'll get what he needs, or he'll give them what they need, and then he will dip up out of there. He will actually lose their number because he, and it comes up later in the movie, when he's with Andrea and she says to him, like, I don't want to see you get hurt. Whenever, you know, there's a guy getting mugged, and Batman is like, I have to go stop him. What do you expect me to do? And she's like, I just don't want you to do that. And so, yeah, like that really sits with him. And I think that that has a lot to do with why he has to, you know, he has to keep up the Playboy facade because, you know, that's his whole, you know, that's the character. Like Bruce Wayne is the character, that he's doing. But yeah, like he has to not get close to anybody because that's not an option for Batman.
Oh,
A,
that's
so
such a
that
good
they don't
point. I
know that
never
he's
thought
Batman. Well, A, so
it.
they don't know he's Batman, and then B, so that they can't be used against him and all that. But yeah.
Right. And I never thought, like, you just made such a good point of what would seem like a small moment of that girl throwing wine in his face and just the whole, oh, yeah, you're expecting to see. I mean, first of all, every Batman movie has a gala, so you gotta have your gala. And then it's like, oh, you know, he's dealing with the playgirls, if you will. But yeah, I never thought of that whole scene as set up for what the movie is really about for him, of this test of, yeah, which, you know, we're not spoiler territory, but yeah, things with Andrea and the relationship stuff. Yeah.
So, then that's what takes us into our first flashback. And so in this flashback, we see how he meets Andrea, and we see some of his early days of crime fighting. So we see, you know, the ski mask and, you know, him just showing up to, you know, stop people and them just being like, who's this guy? Like you picked the wrong day, pal. And, you know, and you can see that he's still new to this because, like, even whenever he's able to, you know, get some stuff done, he's like, yes, I did it. Like, you can see some of that early, like, it's just, again, that just speaks to how good Kevin Conroy is.
Oh, so good.
Because, like, even in those moments, like, we could tell that this was an early Batman who didn't quite have it all together, who hadn't quite figured it out. And I mean, he knows pretty immediately. He's like, they aren't afraid of me, and that's the problem. Like, I need them to fear me because I showed up and they were unbothered, and that doesn't work for what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, and fear
So.
being so, yeah, like he is fear, so he's got to change that up.
And so then we see the second guy get got. So we see Buzz Bronski, who's, you know, visiting Chucky's grave, and then the
Great
Phantasm
name.
shows up. Yes, I agree. That is a good name. But so yeah, he shows up, and then the Phantasm kills him. And I noticed, and I don't know if this is because the movie was PG, because there was still some blood, but the Phantasm never actually got her hands dirty. Like, it looked real circumstantial a lot in a lot of the kills, and that was probably on purpose. But yeah, like the first guy, he died in his own car because he flew out of the like he flew out of the garage, I guess. The second guy, there was a grave and then something fell on him. And so even though the Phantasm has like a
Yeah,
hook
good point.
blade, never hands don't get dirty.
I know, it's like if this was a new or adult series, yeah, you would just be seeing people getting sliced through the neck.
Oh yeah.
And back, you know, if it's for kids, it's like the Looney Tunes version is, you know, she swings, misses, and then a statue falls on the guy.
Yeah, and I don't know if the word whacked was used to avoid using certain vocabulary or if it went with the whole like gangster theme
That happy accent. Yeah, good point.
or if it was just a combination of both. But yeah, like I don't know if the censors were as you know hard on things as they are now, because I know that That being PG surprised me. Like that probably that was creeping up to PG-13. But it was a
Well, this
90s
is also
PG.
93, so PG back then meant something different. You know, I mean,
Yes.
PG, you know, I guess this is an extreme example, but you still had dudes' faces getting melted in Indiana Jones movies with PG,
You're right.
but
And
yeah, I
that's
mean,
what I'm
I
saying.
guess
Like,
kids' movies, you know, maybe that's a different level, so yeah.
but I was unbothered at the time. Like that was fine, but I also really like violent movies. So I don't know if that makes a difference here, but yeah, I was surprised that there were people, I mean, as an adult, knowing that it was PG and knowing that this was made for like children in mind. Like I feel like Batman the Animated Series was Y7. And so the fact that this comes from that world, the fact that there was blood in here, the fact that there was murder,
Murder.
I was like, PG, okay. But we were
Yeah, no,
stronger
that's a
back
good
then.
point because they had strict rules. What was it? PN, whatever the organization is, but the censors would come in and say, you know, if someone fell off a bridge, for example, you'd have to see them surface from the water.
Yeah.
Like they were specific, and they would have to add that animation in before the final cut, or they could not air it. Whereas you're right, this is not only is there death and murder in the show, in the movie, it's about people getting killed.
Yes, like specifically, like that's the premise is Batman's a killer now and we have to stop him. And so, yeah, but he's killing bad people. And but also, yeah, like the Joker Venom, which we'll talk about that in a minute.
Got
So he dies, and of course, you know, everybody thinks it's Batman, and the commissioner is like, I'm not going after Batman. I'm not doing that. I know Batman's not a killer, and so, you know, I refuse. And then we are taken to the cemetery where Batman is, you know, investigating, and Andrea just happens to be there talking to her mom. And she's like, oh, Bruce. And so that's one thing that I didn't remember from back when I watched it. I guess I forgot that she knew he was Batman, which confused me because she left before he became Batman. So why does she know he's Batman?
That's a good point. Right. When and in the flashbacks, there's no like meet cute of Vicky Vale in the Batcave. You're right.
So I don't know why she just and knew it like immediate, like as if she was in on it. Like she just, oh, Bruce was here, and just in full cowl. Because at first I was like, is it because he was near the Wayne Stone, or like is that how she figured it out? Or but no, it looked like she knew already. So that's one thing that I was a little confused by.
Good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
But then Andrea's on a date with the councilman who's obviously like trying to, you know, get in there. Because even on the phone, he was like, you coming to see somebody? And she was like, no, that's old news. And he was like, good to know. Good to know. So yeah, he
This will
was,
not be strictly business.
yeah, he was definitely, you know, on the agenda. And so Batman is spying on them from afar. And that takes us
A
into
total
our,
creep. I love it. It's like
yeah.
my ex is on a date. What the
Yeah. And
hell?
that takes us into our next flashback, which is where we see Batman and Andrea like kind of having a life together. You know, they're having a great time. We see him see his inspiration for the Batmobile in the like
Loved it.
futuristic museum thing. He meets her father, and he meets Arthur for the first time, and you know, he's looking around like this probably like that the when Salvatore comes in, he's probably like this guy's probably not great, but whatever. It's none of my business.
This guy's definitely a mobbed up sleazeball,
Yeah, I mean like he is. Like there's no way around it. Like that's exactly what's happening. But you know,
but okay.
I guess her father is just a businessman.
Yeah, you know, when you
And
live, when you're rich and you live in New York, it's a 50-50 whether or not you're dealing with
yeah.
somebody.
That's yeah, because when you're in that billionaire circle, it's like it gets some people didn't get there by the cleanest of means.
Specifically with development, you know, not to get too deep into it, but yeah, like if you wanted a construction bid in New York City in the past 70 years, good luck not brushing up against somebody.
Yeah, some or there's going to be some hard evictions,
Yeah.
and yeah, somebody's going to get hurt by the end of it. That's
One way
just how
or
it's going to be.
another. Yeah.
And so we also see Batman have to come to grips with making a decision, because he's, at his parents' tombstone, like, "Hey, I know I made you a promise, but when I did that, I did not, like, happiness wasn't in my plans. That is not something I thought I would have. And here I am, kind of a, like, I'm good. Like, I'm happy. I found somebody who I love and loves me and that I want to build a life with." And that was not in the plan, but like, I think that's what I want to do. Because we normally see him choose Batman every time. And I say normally because I feel like in most things up to now, we have seen that. But as early as this was, it's hard to say that always is the answer, because in this, he chooses Bruce as opposed to choosing Batman. And like, he ended up having to go with his second option. But, that's I feel like that's not what we usually see from Batman.
No, you're definitely right. And if I may, some Kevin Conroy trivia, he has said many times in interviews that that is one of his favorite moments of the character altogether, and voicing it is Bruce Wayne apologizing to his parents for being happy.
Yeah.
Because that means that he's letting go of the vow, which would invariably make him unhappy and make him the character that we know. But again, this is this early on test of the character of saying, which am I going to choose? So it's so good. And also before that, real quick, before I forget, because we were just talking about, because we're definitely going to get way more into what we're talking about right now. But just before I forget, the gangster stuff I found really interesting of like, you know, first of all, it's just funny that the first, was it the first day that he met the father, also Sal Villestra walks in the office? Was that like the same?
Yes, those were the same day.
So if you think about that, you know, metaphorically, symbolically, whatever, it's like Bruce's introduction, even to happiness, the possibility of happiness, this city is just rifled with corruption. And into his character, deeper into his own character, it's kind of like, you know, corruption's always going to kind of be there. And which direction of against corruption or for corruption is this guy going to? I just love that point is corruption and the mob is part of even this kind of happiness trajectory that's possible for him.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, like it's entrenched. And so yeah, like that's something that yeah, he's gotta navigate. In it, like, regardless of the life he chooses. Like, that's something he's gotta navigate. And so speaking of Salvatore, he gets real nervous when he hears that Batman's killing people. Like, his like, he gotta get some oxygen, 'cause he's not okay. When he reads that in the paper, and
You'll pass that.
he's like, "I'm next, and I need to do something about it." And so, in the Batcave, of course, Batman is, doing the detective thing, and he's able to connect the two people that have died with Salvatore and Andrea's father. And then we see a flashback where Bruce proposes. And so this is the flashback where we see the decision that Bruce makes, where he apologizes to his parents for being happy, but then he says, "I'm going to choose happiness, because that's what I want ultimately. I had no idea that's what I wanted. I didn't think that was an option for me, but now that it's here, that's what I want to do." And she's, very happy. And then She gets dropped off at the house, and we see that there are some visitors. And we don't quite know how that ends yet, but we see later in the movie how that goes. And so all Bruce knows is that she just left. She's like, hey, I had to get out of town. Forget all about me. And so, you know, it's like, okay, you have made the decision for me. Cool. And so, coming out of the flashback, Salvatore goes to see the Joker. And he figures, I need you to get Batman before Batman gets me. I don't care how much it costs, get it done.
Which
And
is just, they love doing this in Batman stories of, all right, well, we got to get somebody, so we might as well, or we got to get Batman, so we got to enlist the Joker. We're going to hire the Joker. It's like never a good idea, but
never a good
yeah.
idea.
No.
And
Never seems to work out.
it just, he's a crazy man. And
Little nuts, that Joker.
but people don't understand it. And it took me a while to understand it. I mean, and I mentioned this in one of my episodes, but it took me watching The Dark Knight Returns Part 2 to really understand how crazy the Joker is. And I know that there are a lot of different situations you could point to that are like, how is that not the thing that made you realize it? But that was the movie I needed to see to understand, like, oh, he's the kind of crazy I didn't know was a thing. Like his level of cra like that's like that level of crazy wasn't processing in my head until I saw that movie. And that's when I was like, oh, he's operating on a level of crazy that my mind wasn't reaching. And people learn that the
Yeah,
hard
that is
way.
interesting. Yeah, there's like levels of the Joker. Yeah, and you're like, oh crap, I didn't even, we weren't even able to process it. Yeah, the ability of that character to do that.
And yeah, like people learn that the hard way in these movies
Yeah.
and in the comic book.
They do.
And this
I
is
mean,
a
I guess
great
the one
example.
excuse for this movie is that this might be early on, and I was actually thinking about this with the whole like police thing too. Would they be so quick to think that Batman is going around murdering if this was, I'm talking about the present. Like, is this, where in the present is this? I still think we're talking probably like year three, year four. We're not talking like late Batman.
That's what I also wonder because, based on the fact that this came out in 1993, leads me to believe that it's between seasons one and two of the animated series. And we see flashbacks of an early Batman, but I wondered how old he was because, in the flashbacks, which in my, like, I didn't think were that long ago, Alfred's hair was black, and then Alfred's hair is white. Now, and usually that's an indication of a lot of time passing because he was, I mean, they made it a point to say Alfred was a lot younger when Batman started this. Like when he did the, my God, like his hair was black.
Was black.
And today his hair is white. So I wonder, but this is a pretty established Batman. He and Commissioner Gordon already have a relationship, the Bat Signal. So, like, he's been doing this for at least a little while. But I also wonder, like, how much time has passed because we know that he continues to be Batman, like, moving forward. And so I guess, like, the oldest he is Justice League Unlimited. In this particular universe, assuming this is running on a linear timeline, but because it's cartoons and you know their timeline may not be taken
Episodic.
into consideration, so I don't know how much time has passed between flashbacks and today. Like I don't know where we are in that, but I would assume a relatively significant amount of time has passed because everyone involved has aged so much because even
Yeah, the
whenever,
aging thing is a good point.
yeah, because I mean, even I saw it with Bronski because whenever they were shaking down Andrea's father, like all those dudes were a lot younger than today's time. And the fact that Salvatore is on oxygen at this point Which he was smoking a cigarette every time we saw him. So, you know,
Yeah, well,
I
that's
like that
also a
they.
gangster thing, so.
And that's also one of those little tiny nuance things that, like, they didn't have to include that. But the fact that, because him smoking a cigarette, perfectly normal under the circumstances, but him being on oxygen, like that's one of those nuanced things that I think they, you know, added in just for some character.
It's a good detail, right? Yeah, to
Yeah.
follow up on the age and then also, yeah, the decay, whatever, yeah.
But I would guess at least 10 years have gone by.
Yeah, that sounds right. Right, because you figure, I mean, if it's pre, if he meets her pre-deciding to go train and all that, you figure he's what, like 19 during that?
Yeah.
He meets her in college at some point, maybe he's right? And then, so you, if he's been Batman for a couple years, then late 20s, early 30s? Yeah,
Yep.
that works. Cool.
Yep.
I always
Yeah,
like
like I
thinking
said.
about timeline stuff. It's not.
And again, like it could be a situation where like that wasn't as heavily taken into consideration as far as like actual number, but whatever. You
But I
know, it's
think it's
just.
worth it. It is worth kind of diving into, like, because just specifically for this movie, though, because of the, all the time jumps, and it's specifically about the character forming. So I think it is important to at least touch on, yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, like I think for yeah, for the for this movie specifically, yes, I think that that's important.
Yeah, so my summary is year three, year four.
Okay. Salvatore went to the Joker, and the Joker was like, "Sure, I'll take care of it." And Batman goes to Andrea to interrogate her about her father's involvement with the criminals, and she is like, "I no, I'm not talking about that." So then the Phantasm goes to see Salvatore, and Joker's already dosed him up. And
Yes.
because they're under the impression that, because the Joker made a deal with Salvatore and then killed Salvatore, so didn't need to honor the deal, but was like, but I'm gonna still get him. And so, under the impression that Batman is the one doing this, he's still set a bomb there and planned to kill Batman, and the Joker was surprised when it was like, "Oh, you're not Batman."
Oh, yeah, good point.
But let me go ahead. I'm still gonna throw this bomb at you. So,
Right. Yeah,
and
that's one of those funny Joker contingencies. You know, it's just like this anarchy. Excuse me. It's like Batman's the master of contingencies to save people, and then Joker is the king of, you know, well, if it blows up, Batman, that works out too.
yeah, that's fine. And yeah, the Joker has got to be an explosions expert because he loves an explosion.
Oh, the best.
Like this is the first explosion in this movie that he sets up, but there are more.
And I also wrote down again the sound design, specifically for a cartoon in the early 90s. They were doing explosions. They all their explosions sound amazing.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Like watch, I'll say watch some of these episodes with headphones, and the sound design, the mix, all of it is so good.
Okay, definitely gonna have to do that.
Yeah.
Because I just have, you know, my sound bar. But yeah, under
Well, still,
headphones
I'm
is a
sure
different
that sounds great
experience.
too, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, the Joker sees that it's not Batman and is like, "All right, I have a bomb, so I'm still, you know, blowing shit up is not an issue for me. So I'm gonna still go ahead and push this button." And luckily, the Phantasm is able to escape and Batman is able to track the Phantasm down, and they, you know, have a brief fight before the Phantasm disappears. And now all of the police are like, "All right, we got him. Take him down." And I mentioned the Dark Knight Returns, and that happens, like that same thing kind of happens in that movie as well. And this, you know, took me back to that moment whenever Batman is having to hide out from a police assault on him.
Oh, good
And
point. I always thought I made the Begins connection, but yeah, that's the very Dark Knight Returns, yeah.
so, yeah, I mean, and yeah, it's so good. But so yeah, he's running away from the police, and one of the things that surprised me that I didn't remember was that he took his cowl off. And so he's Bruce Wayne, like he's Bruce Wayne's head with a bat suit on.
It was so cool looking at it. I mean, it's just so fun watching that scene. Like, just the idea of Batman running from the police. Again, he's this guy who puts it all on the line to protect people and be for justice and work with the police. And this guy cannot, can we curse on the show?
Yes, please.
This guy cannot catch a fucking break. You know, and it's like, and now he's to the point where he's physically stripped down to, he can't even maintain this identity because he's so worn down by the police and all that's happening. And yeah, when he has to jump that fence with no cowl on, it's just like, this is just the best.
Because Batman, and that's one of the things that led me to think this might still be kind of early, because again, like Batman removing his cowl and just having his face out is not something that's not a Batman thing to do. That's not
Yeah, it
very
seemed like
Batman at all.
semi-sloppy, right? Yeah,
And that's the
kind
thing, like, because had Andrea
of,
been literally anyone else,
yeah.
they would have just known, they would have seen him and
The
would be like,
homeless guy sitting there, huh?
yeah, like that's Bruce Wayne, because
Everybody
he's famous
knows.
and everybody knows who he is in the city. And so yeah,
Everybody
like had
knows.
the police been around that corner, like any number of things could have happened where it's like, oh, that's Bruce Wayne. And so I was very surprised that that's the decision that he made. It worked out, of course, because the movie needed to happen, but it surprised me to see him take his cowl off and just be Batman, or just be Bruce Wayne in the bat suit running from the
Yeah, it was
police.
so, yeah.
Like, and if they
Oh
weren't
man, it was
still
so good.
chasing him, that like if he had actually been able to like do that and truly get away, then okay, but like he was still actively being chased. And so yeah, like I was just a little surprised, but it was like, okay, that's what we're doing.
And is
So
that when with the sawhorse thing? Is that when he
yes.
lets go of the cowl? Okay, because I was trying to connect that. I didn't mean to interrupt before. I was trying to make sure that, yeah, he just seems so desperate. Like the desperation in that moment
Yeah.
and then again, like you said, almost out of character to the point of out
And
of character, yeah.
it made me like, whenever I see moments like that, those are the things that make me think, okay, stuff like that is the reason he started getting sidekicks and started collaborating and started like getting help. Because it's moments like that that make us realize not only that he can't do this alone, but that he is but a mere mortal. Because that can be easy to forget when it comes to Batman. And these are the moments in my mind that really humble him and that make me remember, like, oh, he's just a dude with money.
That's such
So.
a good point. Yeah, we think of him as mythic, but he's really just a dude with money. Yeah.
So, back at the manor, Andrea's like, hey, here's the deal. We owed these criminals some money and we couldn't pay it back, so we had to leave, and then we got the money. Like, yeah, it was embezzling, whatever, that's fine. We got the money and we paid them back, but they weren't happy with that. And so she tells him dad had to, handle his business and become the phantasm. And that's one of the things that I also thought was interesting. So the same person voiced her father and the Phantasm. And in my head, that's why. Because she
Stacy
is,
Keach is the actor.
yeah, so she's trying to, the fact that she's, I don't want to use the word frame, but the fact that she's using her dad to say he's the Phantasm, and the fact that that's the voices match, I was like, ah, that's okay.
Wow, I feel dumb. I never put that together. I didn't know Stacy Keach plays the voice of her father too.
Exactly.
Wow,
And
okay.
so that's why I think, I don't know if that's why, but like in my head, I was like, that's why they're the same guy. Okay. Because, with voice acting, like anybody could have been both of those parts.
Right.
But the fact that they had the same person do it, I think speaks to her saying, my father, like her using her father as being the one who's the phantasm. I think that those two are connected.
Love it.
And so, the Joker visits Arthur and is like, hey, Batman's not behind this, but I think you are. And he's like, wait, it wasn't Batman? And so they were the Joker, you know, he was gonna do it anyway. But yeah, the Joker was like, "Oh, you didn't know? Oh, okay. I thought it was
Worry
you, but the fact that you thought, okay, well, that's fine. You're still getting the Joker venom. So, you
about
know,
it.
no skin off my back."
Changes nothing.
Yeah, it's like this is going to end the same way. So, and
Yeah,
you wouldn't want everybody to know about your involvement, would you? Because I happen to know some things, but you wouldn't want that getting out. Okay. And then yeah, we just kind of see in the shadows him getting what looks like assaulted. And he's in the hospital, laughing way too hard. And I think it's funny that the doctors were like, "Hey, you need to calm down," but they know exactly what's going on. Like, because they give him something to say, "Hey, this should calm you down and let the venom run its course, and you should live from it." So they know it's Joker venom, and they know how to kind of suppress it a little bit, but they keep saying to him, "Sir."
They're doctors in Gotham City. I mean, they've seen this before.
Yeah, but they're like, "Sir, you need to calm down." It's like, "No, I can't. You've seen this before. People die from this. Like, why are you telling me to calm down like I can?" And it was funny
That's
to
so
me that,
funny. I didn't notice that.
and then it was also funny to me that, you know, at least from what I could tell, it looked like the medicine calmed him down, but the more stressed out he got, the less effective the calming down medicine was. And that's so Batman showing up, like, caused his anxiety to go up and his blood pressure to rise and all that. And so I think that's why the Joker venom started to kick back up whenever he was being interrogated, because the calming medication was being negated by his own personal, you know, adrenaline almost.
Yeah, because I noticed like when he'd get throughout the interrogation, he'd like throw in a laugh here and there. I thought the number one, the voice actor did a great job, but yeah, it seemed like when a more stressful piece of information was coming out, he'd kind of like laugh for a second. And yeah, it seemed like because of the Joker Venom. So cool, yeah.
Yeah, and that's another thing I was going to say as far as the voice cast goes. That I imagine that doing like that kind of laughter is like really hard on a voice actor, I would assume.
Oof.
Because I'm thinking about if I was a voice actor and I had to do that kind of laughing, like I'd be uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you, I only personally last, and I'm not like pro level at this point yet, but you know, I've spent a lot of time with voice specifically because I've done audiobooks. So you're just spending hours in there talking. With podcasts as well. So the point is, I have spent a lot of time on mics, and my endurance is like 2, 3 hours of just reading like a normal human being who's not laughing like he's being attacked. Apparently, like that's not a lot of like some people are able to stand in there for 5, 6 hours and be okay. So as someone who's not just learning it, but apparently has kind of like a bit of a weak. Because I'll just start to it. My voice loses its richness. It starts to. I just lose it, like literally losing your voice. And I cannot imagine. You know, you're doing numerous takes. You're retching your entire body to force out these awful laughs. And yeah, I don't know. That would have to just. That wouldn't be a fun day in the booth. Let's just say
Yeah, I agree. Like that just it
that.
sounds, and that's
Ugh.
like that's why, again, voice acting is just so it's so good, and people don't realize it. Like there are people who don't understand what has to happen for a voice actor to convey everything just through their voice.
Exactly, because they don't have any of the physical cues. Yeah, you're right.
And so yeah, like
Visual
they,
cues,
but you know, again, the voice acting in this movie is just really good. Andrea knows what she's doing.
yeah.
And so he admits to selling them out. He admits to saying like, yeah, the goons, they just wanted their money, and so yeah, I had to tell them where they were. And he gets whacked. And so Batman goes to search Andrea's place, and the Joker, calls the phone, and I don't know why Batman was like, yeah, let me go ahead and answer this phone. But he does, and the Joker says to, assuming it's Andrea, he says, hey, I got a delivery coming, and don't try jumping out the window this time. You jumped out the window last time, but we're not doing that this time. Because new technology, and the Joker has a drone strike prepared. And so, yeah, it's a drone strike, and
I love the Joker tech. Again, so much the foil. He is so Batman's arch villain. Like, where in this insane man's time and mind is he able to put together, like, in the early 90s, some deco drones that could, like, just do all the shit that he does with his
yeah.
gadgets? It's so
Again, he's got
ridiculous.
to be an explosions expert. And I used to
And tech
wonder,
expert.
yeah, I used to wonder where does the Joker get money from? But then I remembered there are people that hire him to do shit, and then he kills them. And so I'm sure that
That's
his
ridiculous.
resources are vast.
And he just steals whatever, right? So
Yeah.
yeah. But
He's like,
that's a
yeah.
way funnier way. Yeah, people pay him and then he just kills them.
Yeah, like thanks for the check. I'll just take everything now. I
Your
appreciate
life.
it.
Yeah.
Because whenever he killed Salvatore, Salvatore said, I will give you literally any amount of, I will give you a blank check. And he was like, thanks.
Yeah. Well, and in the world's finest movie too. Oh, you haven't talked about that yet. But yeah, there's point is Joker is offered a lot of money in that movie.
And so, luckily Batman is able to survive, and the Phantasm goes to visit the Joker. And the Joker, of course, already knew it was Andrea. So she's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just take this mask off. And then they start fighting. And the Joker.
She did the action figure reveal.
Yeah.
You know the story of the action figure?
No.
Okay, so very quickly, the action figure for Mask of the Phantasm, now that we're in spoilers, is an unmasked Andrea Romano. So if you
Okay.
hadn't seen the movie, it is immediately spoiled by the action figure.
Got it. Okay.
That's toy marketing for you in 1993.
I mean, that's what's most important. Like, honestly, there are shows that were canceled because they weren't selling toys. The shows were great, the shows were successful, they were hitting all the marks, but because the
Right.
merchandise wasn't hitting, they got canceled.
Yeah, done. You're done. You're not selling toys.
Yeah, so that was toys were king. So Batman arrives right on time and sacrifices his motorcycle to the fan, and then
Loved it.
Batman is like,
Absolutely love that moment.
yeah. And then Batman is like, hey, Andrea, stop. And she's like, I don't think I will. And
I'm good.
we and one of the questions that I had was like, so her little like smoke magic, that didn't get explained. I had questions about that
Same.
because she definitely just kind of like waved smoke out of her hand and then again would just like ninja style disappear whenever she wanted to.
Yeah, that's a big blind spot of the movie, right? It's like, where is she getting these skills and these abilities?
I had questions about the tech, and yeah, like I had questions about some of that. But they had a tight 75 minutes.
Right.
And they were able to pack a lot into it. But yeah, I definitely had some questions about the Phantasm and the Phantasm's equipment and abilities. But
Yeah, it seems a little, especially for a Batman story, it does seem for a character that's supposed to be so grounded, I think that's a fair criticism, or at least I'm not saying you're criticizing, but I'll say it's a criticism I have of this movie of just like, where is she getting these abilities? Why at no point could you've what if Batman breaks into her apartment and just finds her tech and like there's just some kind of indication of this is how she's floating around, this is how she's this is where she got all this fighting experience. Something to quickly you have, I mean, again, you only have 75 minutes, but you also have it is a movie's length of Batman the Animated Series about this one character who's the title character. It would be nice to at least get a couple things of how the hell is all this happening.
Yeah, because the only tiny snippet we get is whenever they first meet, and she, he's doing jujitsu, and then she like throws him and is like, "I have skills too." And
Good point. There is setup there. Good point.
so yeah, that was the only time we get some, okay, she can do some stuff. And that was the first time that Alfred, had to walk away.
Sir, I've walked in on you countless times, but this time I approve.
Yeah, like just on the lawn, and then we get a a flash, or I guess a flash forward, because it happens again after she picks him up from being chased by the cops. Yeah, Alfred comes in with tea and is like, "Oh, I'll see myself out."
The second time my tea has gone cold today.
Oh God, it's just that was so funny. It was funny that they did it a second time, and again. PG? PG,
Good
okay.
point. Well, I guess when you're a billionaire and you only have the, your butler living there, you just whatever, anywhere
Yeah.
in the house.
I mean, that's fine, but yeah, I mean, of course, I know they didn't show anything but them like making out a little bit, but yeah, like that was on that PG line where I was like, okay, that's
Well, you're
cool.
definitely right. And they're also, I mean, they're also horizontal on the ground. Like they're, yeah, there's more than PG in there. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit, but back then it was fine. So she disappears, Batman and the Joker begin to fight, and it was so funny to me that their fight was set up like a kaiju battle. Like,
Yes, dude. I put this in my favorite moments. It is a straight up Godzilla fight among miniature Gotham. Yes.
yeah, it was so good. Like, I was like, this is so dumb, but I love it.
It's so dumb. Yes.
But the Joker had like little planes flying, and yeah, like it was just
Yes.
random, but it was hilarious.
So funny.
And
And it's also very Joker too. It's a
yes.
very Joker
Also, yeah, like him flirting with the
thing.
robot
Yes.
that had the knife, like that, because he was doing like butt pats and stuff. Like he was doing some like hardcore, like he was gonna have her that evening. And so, yeah,
He
I
was
was like,
doing more with that. That was a domesticated wife in more than one way.
yes. And I was like,
Yeah.
so yeah, PG, but because she was a robot, I guess it's fine.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, so they have a kaiju battle, and then the Joker's like, "Hey, I have laced this entire place with explosives, so I'm gonna see myself out. You have fun." And this is a situation. Actually, I'm gonna talk about this in a minute. But we see that Batman is able to catch him, and the Joker is like, "So you're just gonna kill us both?" And Batman is like, "Yep, that's what we're doing." And that's one of my favorite things. Like, whenever I see Batman like just willing to risk it all, I'm like, "Yes, Batman is just as crazy sometimes."
He
And
totally is. Yeah, when the two of them get together, especially, you see it, you're just like, oh man, you're
yeah, like there's something a little off. And
not
we see it, so in one of the earlier movies that I discuss, Superman Batman Apocalypse, where they
Yeah.
go up against Darkseid on Apocalypse, Batman is like, "I have rigged all of your hell spores to detonate, so you release the girl or I will turn this planet into a fire pit." And Darkseid is like, "How fucking dare you?" But also respect. Because,
Respect.
yeah, like Superman and Wonder Woman, they wouldn't have done this. But you,
No.
a human,
Yeah.
you're a true crazy person, and I like that about you. Take the girl. And so I like moments whenever we see that Batman is willing to be like, "No, I will burn all this shit to the ground today, if I don't get my way." And maybe that's billionaire entitlement. Who knows? But so it turns out that Andrea didn't leave. Andrea's like, "No, I'm still here, and I'm finishing this today." And Batman is like, "No, please don't do that." And she's like, "That's too late. I'm already doing it." And then,
Plans are made.
yeah, she and the Joker disappear into the ninja smoke. And then there's the explosion, And luckily, Batman, falls to the sewer. I assume it was the sewer. And then he's fine, but he's sad. And Alfred has to be like, hey, buddy, there was nothing you could do. Like, there was no way you could have saved. Like, this was already written in stone. Like, it was too late. There,
She was way out of your reach, yeah.
there was nothing you could do at this point. And we see that she's still alive because, some guy tries talking to her, and then he realizes, like, oh, you don't want me to talk to you right now. So she's, sad, but she leaves. And Batman is like, all right, I guess I gotta get back to work now. And so, he gets back to work. And
Back to it.
so that's pretty much the entire movie. So I know that we've both probably got some comparisons that we want to make. So I will let you start. I just have one main comparison that I want to make, but
Please.
well, I guess I'll start. So I said earlier in this episode, there was a movie that this reminded me of that I couldn't talk about in that episode because we hadn't talked about this yet. But now that we've talked about this, I can say that this has a lot of similarities with Under the Red Hood, because we see somebody that Batman loves that he is separated from through, criminal activity. We see that person return and start killing mob bosses and, just kind of dealing with crime the same way Batman does, but with murder and, cleaning up the streets, if you will. We see somebody who already knows that it is Batman. We see the Joker's involvement, and even at the end, what I wanted to say, I wanted to point out, in Mask of the Phantasm, it's Batman who says, "No, we will both die by this explosion." In the Red Hood, it's the Joker who says, "No, this is better. We can all go together."
Yes.
We also see in both cases there are criminals who are worried about the person, so they hire the Joker just for the Joker to deal with them.
Wow, I never put together all, yeah, so many parallels.
So this movie and Under the Red Hood have a lot of parallels. And whenever I talked about Under the Red Hood, I decided not to bring up that there were a lot of parallels with this movie because this movie came out first, but I knew I
Right.
was going to talk about this movie. And so, yeah, I saw pretty immediately how much inspiration Under the Red Hood took from this movie. And of course, there are other movies that take from it too. We see in Batman Year One, a lot of that comes straight out of the comic book, and so does this. As I said, we see some Dark Knight Returns moments that get recycled through here. And so this movie honestly paved the way for a lot of my favorites.
Well, you know what hit me? It's funny you're saying the whole mob boss killing thing. I feel real dumb because under the Red Hood, back to my obsession with DC animation, like I don't even know how many times I've watched that movie. So, and I'll admit, I guess because we're reviewing this movie, I think Under the Red Hood has it's easier to digest on a rewatch level. Like if you're just trying to rewatch and kind of sit back and relax. Like this is like a solid Batman epic film. It's got the origin story, it's got a love story. That's just a turn on a Batman movie and have a great time level movie. Plus, it's got amazing, writing and everything else. But anyway, that's how much I love that movie. I never thought of those comparisons, but when I was watching it today, one of the specifically like you're saying with the mob boss killings, was Long Halloween.
Yeah, and another very good movie. And
Yeah, but
I don't want to
even
get
just
too
the
far
story
into
in
it.
the comic of going around and killing the mob people, I was just like, oh, that's very Long Halloween. And then you think about the timeline, Long Halloween was 3 years out. That was the comic was 96, and this was 93. So this actually predates Long Halloween.
Yeah. And The Long Halloween, that's a movie that we will be discussing on this podcast. So that
Nice.
should be a good time.
Cool. Well, yeah, I didn't mean to give too much away. I
I
hope
know you're good.
by saying that, but okay.
I mean, all of this stuff is old at this point, so really
Right.
it's fine. But
Yeah. Cool. Yes.
like,
When you cover that, I am looking forward to hearing what your thoughts on that. And because you guys haven't touched the Tomorrowverse yet, have
not, I'm not there yet.
you? Interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
All right.
we're working our way. Because we got to review all of them.
Right.
But
Well,
yeah,
you got a
we
lot to do. There's like 50 of them. So, yeah.
yeah, and I love it. I'm glad that there's
Good.
this much.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's what's
I'm.
great about the DCAMs. I mean, that's what motivated me just real quick to do that one specific. It's such a niche podcast, DC animated movie show, but this was 2019, 2020 I started that, and at that point there were like 42 of them. So there's when I say 50 now, there's probably more like 60 at this point. But
Yeah,
anyway,
and
yeah,
that's
there's
the thing. There are some
plenty
that
to
aren't official, like this one. This one is
do.
not in the list. And so yeah, there are several that I will also be reviewing that, aren't on the actual official list, because the official list starts at 2007 with Superman
2007.
Doomsday. And that was our
Yeah.
first episode of this podcast. And so there are several movies that came out before that. I mean, we have this one, we have Return of
Mystery
the
of the
Joker. We
Batwoman.
have Sub-Zero. Like there are a bunch. And so,
Good point.
yeah, we will make time for all of it.
Yay.
Were there any things, any
Oh, sorry. So you were
comparisons?
talking about were there other comparisons? Yeah, I didn't mean to cut us off there. You were talking about comparisons that you were making to other stuff.
Yes, and that was my main one, was Under the Red Hood, because like I said,
Got
when I watched that movie, I pretty immediately was brought back to this one with a lot of the themes that were happening. Did you have anything that you saw that this movie inspired or was inspired by?
So. Not the inspired or inspired by, although it what hit me most today was actually counter examples, if I may.
Okay.
And again, not to get too negative, but because I mean, a lot of the inspired by stuff I see for sure year one, I see, but year actually, no. So, what's the timeline with the comic of year one? I guess we'll start there.
I think that actually,
I think year one might predate this.
yes, because I feel like year one is 80s,
Right.
but
Because I know
because
Dark Knight Returns is 86, and then I'm pretty sure, yeah, year one would have had to have been after that. I want to say year one is 88, 89, if I'm not
yeah.
mistaken.
And I feel like this movie is based on a year two comic loosely.
Okay.
Because I think that I remember seeing that the Phantasm was based on a character who was called the Reaper.
Well, I hate to get nerdy with you there, but I was just watching the commentary that they did. This one YouTuber had like four different people because they had never done an official commentary for the movie. There was the Fat Man on Batman commentary with Paul Dini. Anyway, most recently they put together a commentary and they were saying that even they were saying like we couldn't believe how similar the character of the Reaper from year two was because that those were happening concurrently. Phantasm was being developed concurrently with year two, and apparently Bruce Timm had no previous knowledge of it.
Okay.
It was just a happy coincidence. That's what he says. That's what they said he said. So that's the story apparently. But yeah, I mean, what hit me most is probably the year one Batman Begins, specifically Batman Begins, because I just love I often think Nolan seems so academic almost in his approach and how dry he is with earnest that whole project was of that whole trilogy, specifically with Begins. So it's like my point is that was do you really think he would have watched animation? Like, was he watching Phantasm and Batman the Animated Series? Then again, the prestige that BTAS had. Maybe. And if it's especially just a movie and he hears, okay, he gets his PAs to get him a collection of all the Batman origin stuff and he's flipping through it. Oh, there's a Batman. I only have to watch a movie to get this. So yeah, maybe he watched some of that, specifically when Bruce is unmasked and his first time kind of out on the town and he's just got the beanie on. I always think of Begins when, you know, he doesn't have the suit yet and he puts the stapler up to Gordon's head and all
Yeah.
that.
Okay.
But yeah, back to my like counterexamples. So this is where I'm just going to slam DC for a minute and then I'll get to the positive. But just like it is so annoying to me that as much as I appreciate the project of Joker, like they just putting a DC label on something annoys me. And I feel like the reason that movie made $1 billion is just because you had a DC character in it, and it really had very little to do with that which is the Joker. And again, I'll keep this brief, but it's just a nitpick that I have about modern approaches, and even within the Arrowverse, I know that's not that modern because at this point it's like 10 years old, but there's just so much of this like, let's just put a DC label on it, and it's not really the thing that you know of. I mean, the whole project of Gotham, the list goes on. And it's kind of like, this is how you just use that character absolutely perfectly, insofar as we don't even really see the character. You could almost remove the Joker. You could supplant another villain with the Joker in this. It's like, it makes perfect sense for an origin story and philosophically, symbolically, whatever you want to call it, of, you know, having the Joker, the arch nemesis of Batman, be in this origin story. So he is perfect for it. But my point is that it's not like this isn't a Joker movie. And this is so properly how you just use a DC character and a DC villain instead of just making up all this other crap. I mean, we just talked how many times, how many examples of like, this is so Joker, this is so Joker for this reason and that reason. He must be a tech expert, explosives expert, like just all the cool things that make Joker who he is. This is such a good employment of a villain within the Batman universe, I think.
I absolutely agree. I'm sure I've mentioned it on our main podcast, but I am not a fan of using name recognition to tell an unrelated story.
Perfect way
Because
to put it. Perfect way to put that. Yeah.
one of the things that I noticed it in recently, because of course it happens in the Joker, but they're unrelated to DC. They came out with a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air type show that used
Yes.
all of the names and characters from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but nothing about it was had anything to do with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I think the show was called Bel-Air.
Better. Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but
Very much, yeah.
it was a coming of age comedy starring Will Smith, and he had to move in with his uncle and his aunt because,
Happened to take place in West Philadelphia, then
Yeah.
Bel
But
Air.
the Bel-Air show that they made, a couple years ago had nothing to do with any of that. They literally just used the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, again, names of characters to tell a story that that could have been anything. That could like they could have used any number of people like that. I'm not a fan of doing that. Like, I've never liked it. And I agree with the Joker, that could have been completely unrelated to DC entirely. It did not need to be the
Completely.
Joker because it
Yeah.
wasn't. And one of the things that I have said is one of my favorite things about the Joker is not knowing his origin story.
Yes.
Normally, I want to know the history, I want to know all of the things, but with the Joker specifically, I love that it's multiple choice, as he puts it. The origin stories that he tells, you don't know if they're true or not. You have no idea what his actual origin story is because in this movie, we see a potential origin story because in the photo, Batman is like, oh shit, that guy standing up is the Joker. And the only thing we
Oh
really
yeah, good
know,
point. There is a bit of Joker origin in this. You're right,
and the only
yeah.
thing that we know, or generally speaking, is the whole like Red Hood thing. So he was wearing the Red Hood, he fell into the acid, now he's the Joker. And then they started, adding things around that and within that. But I really liked not knowing anything. Like he's a villain where I want there to never be an origin story for him. Like I want everything that we have to be all that we know, and for it to just be like, what did happen to him? We'll just never know.
Yeah, where did I get these scars? Who knows?
Yeah. And so, very specifically with the Joker film with Joaquin, I have that issue. But I'm not a fan of that happening at all. Like, I don't like, I again, I don't like using like an IP to tell an unrelated story. And sometimes it works, but usually it doesn't. Like, I'd say a situation where it like maybe worked was Wednesday on Netflix.
Sure,
Like
yeah.
that's a situation where like they used the Addams Family IP to tell a story that really could have been anyone. That didn't have to involve the Addams Family at all, but it did, and you know, that's fine, I guess.
Totally. Right. That could
So
have just been some weird gothic coming of age, teen story, but instead you plug the Addams Family in. But then again, like you said, it honors so much. It is so damn Addams Family at the same time.
yes, and
Yeah,
that's why
and
I said like
whereas
that's an example of it being done well,
done
but
well, yeah.
generally speaking, I'm against that as a concept.
Yeah.
However, I do like comic books kind of have free rein to do that because they are able to take their same characters and tell a bunch of different stories and have a bunch of different versions and a bunch of different personalities for the characters and all that. Because even talking about like Batman Year One and like Frank Miller's stories, Frank Miller's Batman is a little different than the Batman that we're used to. Like Frank Miller's Batman, his give a damn is so much lower, and he will like he does not play games. Like he
One of
yeah,
my favorite
that
things that you
Batman
say,
is more of a
sorry to cut
dick.
you off, but one of my favorite things that you say on this show, I think what you're trying to say is he's a problem.
A problem. Yes, he
Yes.
is. And I know
I
you're a
finally
listener.
got to hear you say it.
Oh God, yeah, but oh, that is correct. Yeah, Frank Miller's Batman, he's a fucking problem. He
He's a
really is.
problem.
Like he's too much.
I am the
And
goddamn Batman. It's like, all right, calm down.
yeah, like we get it, buddy. Yeah. Oh, he's too much. But
Yeah, that's my counter example one, I'd say, of the Joker. Don't, this is how you use the Joker and or a villain. And I'll also say number two is this is just where Chris Nolan and I philosophically disagree about this character. Batman should not be happy, especially in his mid-30s. Like, no, that's the wrong pill to swallow. Whatever Matrix analogy you want to make, wrong choice. I don't want to see him happy on the Arno River in Florence drinking cappuccino at age 35. Maybe if you want to play around with it at like, pre-Dark Knight Returns age, late 50s something, and he's just got to give it up, and then he settles down. Like, you don't have to go Batman Beyond level unhappiness necessarily with Bruce, but sorry, don't care about him having a relationship and being happy, when you end the story. But it is perfect when you begin the story, and that's why I think, again, it's not only a counterexample of how not to end the Batman story, but it proves the point further into how important this whole, like, should I or should I not be in a relationship story is to his beginning. And what pisses me off about a movie that's nearly perfect, which is The Dark Knight, 10 minutes into that movie, 15 minutes into that movie, he is already talking about quitting being Batman. And it's like, sorry, Chris Nolan, you're fucking wrong.
Yeah.
So, and this plays that perfect, I think.
Okay. So, scale of 1 to 10, Mask of the Phantasm. What are you thinking?
Oh man. I want to just jump straight into 10. I really do. You know what? I'm gonna do it because I wasn't gonna. I've heard over the years I've been contaminated with other reviews because I'm so obsessed with this movie, and people have knocked it for the animation and very quickly to go into, do you know the animation story behind this?
I'll say no.
All right, so it was originally formatted, and again, I'll keep it brief, but it's relevant to my review, which is the original format when they animated this movie was 4:3 because it was TV. So for those unfamiliar, that's your standard TV square visual versus the 16:9, which is your standard widescreen theatrical. Then last minute, they were like, we're going to put it out theatrically, which absolutely killed the marketing of this movie because it was originally a children's TV movie, and all of a sudden they're getting a theatrical release. Fun fact, on Christmas Day, 1993, three friggin' people saw the thing, and it completely died in the theater. But what also happened in that process was they had to, very last minute, stretch all that animation to widescreen. So a lot got lost in the process. I don't know if it was just because I watched it. I just watched it weirdly on my iPhone. But I have the iPhone 15 Pro Max, and it's just got this giant screen, and it's like the best screen technology going on right now. And I gotta say, this movie freaking looked amazing. And it was still the 16:9 HBO Max, like nothing super fancy about it. But I guess just what I'm trying to say is post remaster, this movie looks, maybe it was, because I had seen it pre-remaster before, but I would say post remaster, I'm still gonna give it a 10 out of 10, including the animation, because I used to give it like an 8 to 9 out of 10 because I think a lot of the animation got compromised. Because it was essentially the budget of an animated series episode put into a longer movie. And it is a visual medium, and this show always had this kind of like the prestige of its animation. And I felt like, whereas with, Return of the Joker, for example, or even Batman Sub-Zero, that movie looks like they really stepped up the animation, whereas for a budget of a movie, they didn't with this. And, but I don't know. Again, post remaster, I think I can safely give it a 10 out of 10.
As far as the animation goes, it did just feel like it felt like a more cleaned up version of the show. Like it felt like this movie was just three episodes, which was fine with me, but because I mean it's a great show, and
I'll take 3 episodes of something great. Yeah,
like
absolutely.
I love shows, so
Yeah.
For me, this is probably going to be an 8.5.
Okay.
And I think a lot of that may have to do with the time period because compared to the movies that, we've seen, in the 2010s, of course, like fight choreography is really important to me now. And, that's one of those things, again, the time period. That wasn't really a big thing. It's kind of just like Batman throwing big, huge haymakers, and that's the action. Other
Martial
than,
arts was not factored in back then, yeah.
yeah, and honestly, this movie has a little more than, a lot of the stuff at the time because Batman is doing jujitsu, and we see that, but I feel like episode to episode, there's not a lot of that. We just, again, we just see Batman like dodge, big punch. Like that's just what it is. And so
Kind of cartoony,
yeah. And that was the time. And so in the 90s, this is probably easily a 10. But just today, because I have to look at it with everything that I've seen and everything that I know, the story being told is still really good. The impact that this movie has is still very relevant because again, we just talked about all of the things that this did for the first time and all of the things that were able to, pull things from this. And so this movie is very important. This is a movie that without it, there's a lot we don't get. Because if this is the like since Batman the Animated Series is the first, I guess, in my mind, it's the first DC animated item, like period. I know there were Super Friends and shit before, but like Batman the Animated Series is the beginning for me. And so that makes this the first DC animated movie. And it laid the groundwork for everything that we have. I say the same thing on the main podcast about how important Blade was to the MCU. This movie is the beginning, and this movie gives us everything that we need. And because it's packaged with Batman the Animated Series, like that whole thing, and then because Batman the Animated Series becomes an entire universe, and ends with Justice League Unlimited, which is literally DC's entire roster. And so, that I mean, in the same universe, you know, again, you mentioned Superman the Animated Series. We have Static Shock that exists in this universe. Batman got spin-offs, because, you know, Batman the Animated Series ended, and they were like, no, he's not done. He's got more to do. So he just gets another show. Like, so yeah, like this, I don't want to understate the importance of this film, but and you know, the fact that it's a good movie beyond the impact that it had. But to me, 8.5.
Well,
And
that was really interesting hearing you go through all that because, yeah, it kind of made me walk back a little bit of the praise. And I guess I did admit it before, though. I was honest that this is not, weirdly, while this is in the pantheon of like quality for the Batman the Animated Series and the movies and all of it, and even Batman in general, like you ask a lot of people, this is their favorite Batman movie. It is not my go-to to watch. Like if I'm gonna choose, I will choose Red Hood over this. And that probably, and even weirdly, like I know a lot of people hate on the Dekamu, the new 52 flicks, but honestly, Son of Batman in those movies, as dumb as some of those scenes of some of those movies are and ridiculous, it is so watchable. And I think a lot of that, as you said, goes to it's a different time. It's just the martial arts has stepped up. The quality of the animation is so solid that, you know, and you know, I know you haven't gotten into the Tomorrowverse, but to keep it relevant to this, it's kind of like the, let's say, reliability, the solidity, how solid the Dekamu is, the new 52 flicks, versus, you know, the not so solid Tomorrowverse. I think that this is a good example of just like solid DC animation. But yeah, it does not hold up the same way, probably, I think, Red Hood and the more modern ones do. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. And again, like I know that for me, there are situations where nostalgia does a lot of heavy lifting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I tried to take that out of my assessment because I know that it's very easy for me to get caught in a nostalgia trap. I know that about myself. I think that that is just a millennial trait in general. I think that is why nostalgia is a billion-dollar market.
Seriously.
But yeah, I think again, it holds up. Like I'm not trying to, you know, shit on this movie or anything. It's still very good. But, you know, again, compared to just the time, it was probably the GOAT of its time and up to a certain point. But for me, that's not the case anymore. And, you know, for some people that still hold it there, not a problem. Like
Totally.
I'm not saying that it's an issue, but I mean, like using basketball terms, for example, like there are some people where Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the GOAT, and that's not changing.
Yeah.
For some people, you know, it's Michael Jordan, and that's not changing. But then some people saw LeBron, and they were like, "Oh, I think we may have something here." Some people are like, "Nope, it is still Michael Jordan." And there are some people that are like, "No, it will always be Kareem." So, you know, I understand why people say that this is the best or their favorite Batman movie. And, you know, I'm not mad at anybody who feels that way. So.
Well, no, I mean, that's a good point too about I love that approach of number one, your honesty, but number two, like, sorry, cultural progress happens, and with cultural progress is the things that were once great sometimes will be, replaced by things that are better with time. That just is going to happen. And yeah, I mean, there's just some movies, like, I'm sorry, Batman 89 is not the best Batman movie. It is just
Sorry.
not.
Yeah,
And like the
it's just
Burton
not.
flicks, right? I mean, are you serious? Like, you're really going to try to tell me? Or here's the best example. It's like, I don't want to get too deep into this, but like, I just here's this the best example of what I cannot stand. You hate with like a fervent passion Batman Forever, but then you hold Batman Returns to this like pedestal. Like, bro, Batman Returns is batshit dumb. It just is. And it's fun, but it really is just Tim Burton took hallucinogens, and here and there Batman shows up in that movie. It is so crazy and so not Batman and so weird that to hold that, like, so to use that, I think is the best example, in my opinion, of what maybe you're trying to say with nostalgia. It's like you gotta let go of that. I mean, I saw that was the first Batman movie I ever saw in theaters, Batman Returns, and it was amazing. But guess what? I was seven.
Yeah, and that's where I like
was seven.
I saw George Clooney as Batman with the nipples, and I loved it when I saw it
When you saw it.
because it was Batman, and I was like, hey, look,
Right.
it's Batman. And me and Batman, we go way back. So anything
Yeah.
Batman at that age, I was here for it. I wasn't
Yeah.
old enough to hate stuff. And then yeah, I realized like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
Along with a lot of other things, but yeah, so I will say, yeah, nostalgia goggles can definitely sway opinions, but I do my best to take those off whenever I'm analyzing stuff, but sometimes that's a part of why I enjoy stuff, and I'm not gonna lie and say that there aren't things that are bad that I still don't love because of nostalgia,
Totally.
like
Well, even like I mean, I mentioned before the like Son of Batman in particular, a lot of that movie is pretty dumb, but I just for whatever reason, it brings me back to once again my to full circle the podcast of my obsession with DC animation of getting so into the specifically the DC animated movies. I mean, I just soaked them up, everyone I could find. I would every week I would have like a specific time of the week that I'd watch them and put them aside. And I guess it just brings me back to that time of fandom and becoming obsessed with my favorite character, So, but that again, you can still admit it is pretty dumb. And I guess what you're hearing right now is me walking back my 10 to a
And that's okay.
nine.
Like that's the thing. Like when you, because
Yes.
that's why in our main podcast, a lot of times we'll give an initial rating and then we'll
Okay.
talk about it and see if it changes.
Interesting.
Because I know that I am very guilty of being very generous up front, and then I give it some thought and I'm like, oh, were some things that were not considered in that first number. So,
Definitely. And I think with this one, a big standout again, I think the Phantasm stuff was a little sloppy, and we didn't talk about it, but this is another thing that if, real quick with criticisms of mysteries, while they might not be easy to write, this was so sloppy. It's like she shows up for the we've never met Andrea. She shows up to town for the first time, and the Phantasm shows up for the first time. Like, I wonder who it is.
yeah.
Not the strongest mystery writing. Also, and you could say again, oh, well, this is classic noir, and they're not always great mysteries. Yeah, well, I mean, I watched LA Confidential like 2 weeks ago, and it
LA
was pretty
Confidential is not
hard.
good.
Oh God, it's so good. And I want to make very clear, I know you're talking about a movie that was written in 3 months for children for Batman animation versus, one of the best noir movies maybe ever. But like, they still threw me off, and I still think you could have put in some work with that, along with like, this happens in some of the best of them, though. To give an example of a classic that has a bad mystery, essentially, is Hush. It's another one. It's like everyone knows who Hush is. He just came to town for the first time. No one knew who Tommy Elliot was before he showed up, and now people are getting murdered. It's like, guess who it is?
I in the very next episode that I'm doing, I kind of had that same thing.
Oh crap, you haven't talked about the movie. I was thinking about the comic, but yes, the movie, yes.
No, we haven't. Yeah, we haven't yet. But and yeah, no, you're free to talk about anything. But I'm saying, like,
Got it.
in the next episode of DC Animation with Spencer and friends, it's like, was that supposed to be a secret? Because you kind of just told us.
It's just so sloppy. What?
But anything else on this movie though?
I'm trying to think. I said before, let me, I guess real quick, my moments, the bat cycle. That, okay, so I did mention how much I love that the shot of the bat cycle flying into the jet engine, but specifically the Batman the Animated Series bat cycle is one of my favorite things from the whole show. The design of it, I always love the Batmobile of it. While I might not be a car guy, like that thing is just gorgeous. And adding to the list of all the things that I love about this movie, they even threw in the bat cycle at the very end just to literally throw it into a jet engine. So thank you for
And I
that.
mean, of course, he has more, but because he always
Yeah,
does.
I that's like one of his four bat cycles. Yeah. One other thing real quick, the shot of him getting out of the water after that World's Fair place blows up, there is just this incredible shot. Where they play around with the color and the shadowing of it, and it's this orange that he is covered in as he comes out of the water, almost in this like Apocalypse Now level, you know, what's in Brando coming out the water. It's just God, they just knew how to friggin' animate the show. The show is just so gorgeous. In case you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie, you know, in case you've never seen Batman the Animated Series, they did a real good job and it looked great. So
You should definitely watch that, especially if you're listening.
probably
Like, you should probably watch that.
watching for stuff. But yeah, that shot really stood out to me, and I have here a relationship with Andrea. Yeah, I guess that we covered all that before of I just love that, you know, part of solidifying the character of who he is was through this thing, and that they never played too much with it in the show, thank God. It's like they got it out of the way. And then in these episodic stories throughout the show, it wasn't what I said before that pissed me off about Dark Knight of now we have to watch this guy want to quit for the next 2.5 acts and cry about Rachel for an act and a half. And I don't care about any of that. So to remove it all from the rest of the series, thumbs up.
Excellent. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Oh, again, the honor is all mine. Anytime your podcast pops up, I listen to it immediately. So I love
All right, well, thank you. I want everybody to aspire to be like you.
yes, like and subscribe.
Well, all right. In the next episode, we will be discussing Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. So until then, salutations.